this week with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please text or call 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or simply visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. So I'm going to start the show off this week with On the Positive Side, because I'm doing both Ron's Rant of the Week and also On the Positive Side. And I just thought this was kind of interesting. I was perusing through a bunch of information here, and I came up with, and this is one for Fran here. Can you name America's oldest bike maker? Franny, you have any idea on that one?
America's oldest bike maker's not Schwinn?
Not Schwinn.
Oh.
Big hint, not Schwinn.
Okay, is it Huffy?
No.
Is it Rully?
You'll never get it.
Is it, give me a hint?
Can I give you a hint?
Yeah.
Well, let me think here. New York City is a hint.
Good Lord.
And you know what? The company is still based out of New York. Still based out of New York.
Do I, like, know anybody who has a bicycle from this company?
No, probably not.
So it's really rare.
It's something that you're not associated with. But people who were, let's say, factory workers would probably know the answer to this.
It's an old bicycle. So it's a factory.
Or maybe a street vendor would know the name of would know the answer to this.
Subrette?
No.
Oh.
No. I'm gonna let you know.
Okay.
I'm gonna let you know. So the big shout out on a positive side is to Morris Worksman. Okay.
Yeah, no, I would never not have gotten
no,
that.
No, you would not have gotten this. Okay, Morris Worksman made and created a company called Worksman Bicycles.
Was he Jewish?
You think?
Yeah.
So anyway, Morris Worksman thought bikes could help solve a problem with, he's actually a Russian immigrant, and his name was Morris Worksman. And by the late 19th century, New York was literally full of, you guessed it, yes, things that come out of the back of animals, etc. Transportation was primarily horse-powered, and the animals produced about 2.5 million pounds of manure a day. So Morris Worksman came up with this idea of making a little cart that you could use to pick up the manure with. And then it got converted over into a bicycle. And so today, Worksman Cycles still makes bikes and trikes in New York City, earning its title of the oldest American bike manufacturer. Schwinn was founded in 1895, but no longer produces bikes domestically. So that way, now Worksman has taken over that honor. And they are still producing in the U.S., and they make these really cool, like, three-wheeled bicycles with carts in the back. They're very heavy-duty. I know I used to sell them at the bicycle shop because I would have people that would come in looking for them that were looking for a local transport type unit, or we also had a couple of factories, manufacturing points in Willimantic that used them on their factory floors because it's way faster to get across the room because the rooms are very big on the bicycle and to carry parts and things that you needed to keep up with the manufacturing. And then, of course, they are also on the streets. You see them, vegetable vendors and hot dog vendors and all. So Worksman, been around for a while. So that's the positive side, Morris Worksman. On Ron's Rant of the Week, I was kind of pressed to do, I'm not really sure if this is appropriate or not, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's not really a rant today. What I'd like to talk about today is I'd like to talk about a cyclist by the name of Chad Young. U.S. cyclist Chad Young dies of race injuries. Young boy Chad Young from New Hampshire. He was from New Market, New Hampshire, 21 years old. He was in the Tour of Gila in New Mexico just a little over a week ago. And he had a bad crash, and he suffered severe head injuries. And unfortunately, we've lost him. And everything that I have read about him and the people and the connections that he had with people, he was just a really super guy. Nice kid. I have a friend of mine who he raced for his cycling team, CCB out of Boston, for when he was first getting involved. He was actually riding for a professional team that is managed by Axel Merckx, who is Eddie Merckx's son. So anyway, very, very sad. A big loss to the cycling world, a big loss to obviously his friends and family and the New England cycling scene too, because a lot of people knew who he was. So anyway, moving on from that, I have a number of other things. We'll try to get a little more positive on this one. Here we go. 6 spring training mistakes you didn't realize that you were making. Okay, so now here you are. You're on your bike. You're getting the cobwebs out of your legs and out of your brain, and you're all set to go and ramp up and do some high intensity workouts and do some hill climbs and get yourself in shape so you can, you know, hang on the group ride, or that you can, you know, just because you're looking for personal fitness. And so anyway, the 6 mistakes that you didn't realize you were making, we're going to start with number 1 on the list. And here it is. This is kind of a big DUH, as Fran and I like to call it. Going too hard too soon. And this is a big one. This is a real big one. I see this so often with people. They go out, they go on their first ride. Maybe they're going out with a few friends. Maybe they're going out in a larger group. And they come to the conclusion that they are, they're not quite ready for it yet. So they decide to go out and ride their bikes super hard all week long. And they increase their training in rapid amounts. So they're adding more and more miles on, thinking that, well, if I just get the miles in, I'm going to be fine. Bad idea, okay? You want to really crank the intensity slowly up as your training goes on. 10 to 15% per week is the recommendation here. So something to think about. I see people often will go out, and I'm guilty of this. I've definitely done it too, where they will, let's say their first week that they get out on the road, they put together a couple of 25-mile rides so they get 50 miles in, okay? And then the next week they decide, you know what? I did 25 last week. I'm going to do 2 more days, same idea, and I'm going to do 100 miles. And now you've made a 50% increase in your training, which is a really bad idea. And even though you've been smart enough to keep the numbers down, so you've stayed with the 25-mile rides, you still have increased by 50%. We're talking 10 to 15% here. Baby steps get you to the big payout. So remember that. So anyway, remember that not to make those big jumps too soon. And the same thing, if you're going out and you're doing intervals or you're doing hill repeats, you know, start out with maybe 3 or 4 hill repeats and then work your way up to the dozen that maybe you have on your list for the future.
Or even listen to your body. Do 3 or 4 and see and check in with yourself. And if you get to 4 and you're like, I don't think I can do 1 more, then what do you do?
Well, you always do 1 more.
Do 1 more, and then you go home. And then what do you do after that? Then you go home.
And then you go home.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
And you go home really easy, too. You
yeah,
go
that's
home,
right.
Like, lowest gear you can find, you know, at what I know you hate it when I call it this, but I'm going to call it anyway, at embarrassingly slow pace.
Yeah, and I don't like calling it embarrassingly slow because you should be proud of going that slow.
There you
go. If somebody judges you because you're going real slow, they don't know what they're doing, and they're in harder, faster, farther. And harder, faster, farther, you know what harder, faster, farther makes you do?
Go slower.
Yes.
Absolutely. I've seen it so many times.
You got to go slow to go fast.
That's what you got to do. That's what all the pros say.
That's right.
Yep, it is. Okay, number 2 on the list here, getting intimidated by group rides.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And, you know, I've often heard people say they want to improve their fitness before joining a group, but this is where you'll earn your stripes, get your pack riding skills up to speed, gain the much-needed variable intensity that will boost your fitness quickly. The camaraderie of the group is also a great competitive motivator when reviewing training files. It's been noticed that someone will work harder during solo training efforts. They'll never work harder during solo efforts than they do with
sure,
a group.
Right.
So you know, you get a little peer pressure there. You push a little bit harder. So being intimidated by the group ride and saying, "Well, I'm going to go ride with you guys as soon as I get in shape." Well, back up here for a second. Why don't you go and ride with the level that you can feel comfortable with until you get in shape, and then take it from there.
Right.
So this is a real big common mistake that I see. And, we have a variety of group rides, and people define themselves by their place that they were riding last year. So if they were riding at a really high level last year, and then they didn't do anything all winter long, and then they get back out on their bike, they assume that they could just hop right back into where they were and be fine with it. And that's a wrong answer. It's really not a good idea to do that. Instead, you'd be better off if you haven't put any miles on, or if you haven't done any training over the winter, if you have done no preparation to get yourself out on your first group ride, start with the short one. Start with the slow one. And, get to know a few new people. That's kind of cool. It's kind of a fun thing. And then work your way up until you get to the point where you feel comfortable.
Right.
So anyway, getting intimidated by group rides. Don't be intimidated. Join in. Doing the same old intervals. Number three here. yes. So if you are doing the same thing that you've been doing over and over and over again, you need to mix it up a little bit. Sometimes you need to just come out with a couple of new ideas. Do some ladders where you step up one level to the next level to the next level and higher intensities as you go along. Maybe do shorter ones as far as time periods go. So do maybe a 2-minute step per step, or maybe even a 30-second per step until you get yourself used to it. So anyway, mix it up a little bit. And remember, as I have always pushed on people when I'm helping them and training them, remember that when you do a hard day, what's the next day?
You do an easy day.
That's right.
Yeah.
And easy is easy. Easy is like really, really easy. If you don't know how easy is, then buy yourself a heart rate monitor. Go out and learn your heart rate zones and learn how easy is. And set the alarm so that if it goes out of zone 2, it goes off, and when it does, you have to back it down.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
So there are tools of training here which will help you. Moving down here, skipping the cross training. Yeah, don't lose all that strength and core stability that you built in the winter months, especially if you did build it in the winter months. You want to make sure you maintain some of that cross training. I have a tendency to back down a little bit more on the weight work as I ride my bike more. So I will back that down to maybe only one day a week. And then from that point on, I'm on my bike a lot. So I definitely will do that. But then when you go back into the fall and you start losing your time to be out on the road and you start losing the ability to keep your fitness level up, then you start increasing and ramping up the indoor work or the cross training or the indoor cycling that you could do too. And loading up on calories. Here's another big mistake. The easiest strategy is to watch your calories year-round. Holidays and winter months make it easier to indulge in treats that sabotage our power-to-weight ratio. So tighten up the nutrition by eating lean meat once per day, unless you're a vegetarian, obviously, upping your veggie intake and saving the simple carbs for just before and during training. So, yeah, the carbs you want to kind of only use them when you need them. I have a practice of, and like I said, this is me. Everyone's different. I'm a very thin person, and I metabolize well. So I have a tendency that I really need to carbo load before I'm going for a long ride or a difficult ride in a particular time. So I will the night before, I will definitely carbo load, and I definitely feel better for it. But anyway, so those are just simple little pitfalls that people run into and you want to pay attention to. That was brought to us actually by Bicycling Magazine, who has been just wonderful this year with all sorts of cool information about cycling and good tips. And I highly recommend that you visit their website because they've got some cool stuff there that they can show you.
Wow, that's really cool.
So,
I
There's something else that's going on right now, too, that is fairly important, other than the fact that it is May and it is Bike Month. And if you want to learn more about that, of course, you can go to the League of American Bicyclists and you can learn all about Bike Month. There are some local events going on that are important to know about. The Bike Mansfield Group right here in Mansfield, Connecticut, has a workshop and ride from the Mansfield Community Center. Ride at 5 p.m., workshop at 7. And it is a workshop on bike commuting and riding to work in Mansfield. And I believe that our good friend Dave Wahlberger is putting that on. So he is a league-certified teacher and instructor, and he can give you lots of great information, not to mention that he's just a pleasure to be around. So shout out to Dave. And I will not see him this Thursday because I will not be in town. So anyway, if you get a chance. Other things that are happening, all sorts of things going on for May being Bike Month. Check in on the calendar and the activities at bikewalkconnecticut.org. I don't know if I have that website right, but just look up Bike Walk Connecticut and you can find it. There's lots of stuff going on there. And then the big one, well, it's not really the big one, but it is a big one in my world, and that is it's Giro d'Italia time. And the Giro has started the Tour of Italy. It's a very large cycling event. Most people assume that the Tour de France is the biggest in the world, and, you know, so therefore that is the one that everybody watches. But bike nerds like myself, no, we watch the Giro too. We watch it carefully. You get to know some of the riders. You get to know the terrains. And then you kind of get to a point where you start picking your favorite of the Grand Tours. And we've had a lot of classic races that have happened up to this point. And the classics are usually one-day races, sometimes multi-day, but usually just one-day races. And then we get to the Grand Tours. And when we get to the Grand Tours, we're talking many, many days and just really physically hard, difficult races. Like the Tour de France, the Tour of Italy, or the Giro d'Italia is a 21-stage race, and it began this year actually in Sicily on the islands, which is kind of cool. And I don't know that I've seen them do this in the recent past, so that's kind of a cool thing. So they're actually starting all the way down the very southern part of Italy. They did a couple of days on two different islands and then across to, if you're looking at it from the boot, the Italy boot, they start at the toe and they work their way over to the heel and then on up. So there's many, many days of racing. It's very exciting. Mainly flat right now. Not a lot of hills in the very first part of it, but they're all racing for the pink jersey because the pink jersey is the big prize in this particular race. And they had a rest day on the 8th, so yesterday they had another stage 4, and it was 181 kilometers long race. All these others have been close to 200 kilometers. Anyway, moving on, we're definitely seeing more flat stages all the way up, pretty much until the 13th of May, which is stage 8, and then it has a flat start and then heads into the hills. And that's when things get really interesting. If you're looking for a really cool breakdown on this, you can go to www.cyclingweekly.com. And if you click on that, and you'll /news/racing/Giro-d'Italia. If you look at there, you will find a neat little video that they've posted along with that page actually is the route, stages, and key climbs is what that page is. And if you look at that, you will find they have a really neat little video, which I actually watched this morning, and it gives you a run through of all the different stages. And it doesn't take a lot of your time. It's about 3.5 minutes worth of time. And you can go through and you can see how it all works out. The interesting part of the Tour of Italy, a number of interesting things. First of all, yes, you can get caught in a blizzard. You can be up in the mountains and, they ride by glaciers. Last year, the leader of the race, pink jersey leader, was he was from the Jumbo Lotto team. He had a 3.5 minute lead with the pink jersey, and he lost it going downhill.
Oh no!
I think it was the Alps, the Italian Alps, and he crashed into a snowbank. And I'm telling you, snowbank. This thing had to be 12 or 15 feet tall. Yeah, well, they're up in the mountains. They're in serious, serious places. And he lost control, and he clipped the edge of that. Like a glacier. And he went down hard, and, of course, that was the end of his race.
Oh.
But because he lost many, many, many minutes off of that. But anything can happen in the Giro. And the other thing about the Giro, and one of the reasons why it's truly my favorite of all the classics, is that anything else can happen too. The steepness of the climbs in the Giro they actually are similar to the steepness of the climbs in the Vuelta a España. Also has some very, very steep climbs in August. But the temperatures and the weather in Italy in May, you just never know what you're going to get. So it adds, there's a lot of X factors that are involved in the Giro. And anyway, it's a favorite race. It's a cool race. I have a very good friend of mine who is over there right now, Jean Carter, and she is visiting her ancestors and relatives, and you know, she went over to kind of check in on the Italian side, and she is going to be watching a stage of the Giro going by where she is, and everyone is just out of control excited about it. There's little pink signs all over Italy right now for the Giro. The finish of this race, and this is really interesting, is so you have this multi-day stage race, 21 days, right? And at the very end, what do they do in the Tour de France? Well, they parade into town, and they drink champagne, and they laugh, and they smile, and they, you know, pretty much have determined who the winner of the race is at that time. And it's a big old party on wheels until they get to the Champs-Élysées, and then everybody like puts the hammer down, and they all show off their sprinting capabilities and their speed capabilities and wow the crowd by doing a multi-lap finish to the race. The Giro, a different story. This year, it finishes with a 28-kilometer time trial. So, think about this. You've got a multi-day stage race. You've got people that are maybe seconds apart, maybe minutes apart in the end. So, the separation of, let's say, the top 10 could be as little as 3 or 4 minutes. Could be as as much as 3 or 4 minutes, but as little as 15 seconds, 10 seconds. It could be that close. And they finish the race with a time trial, and it goes right by the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's going to be a really cool thing. So anyway, the race could be made on the last day in a time trial. And, of course, the time trial, for those of us who are a bunch of cycling geeks out there and have been following bicycle racing for so many years, the time trial is known as the race of truth, because it actually will separate the people who can go the fastest versus the ones who think they can go the fastest. So it's kind of a neat thing. So that's a big deal. And there are going to be, let's see here, there's just a bunch of cool big mountain climbs. The mountain climbs are just so exciting. I love that stuff. But you can catch a lot of this if you go online, you can find a few places that will broadcast it to you streaming if you have the time to sit and watch it. And have the luxury of being at a desk during the day, because it's the only time you're going to see it when you're going to see it live. Currently, to get it broadcast here and to be able to tape it or TiVo it or whatever, you pretty much have to subscribe to it, and you have to pay for that. So that requires a financial commitment. But if you want to just stream it live, you can stream it live in English. You can stream it live in Italian, in Spanish, in almost any language you could possibly imagine. I know the Dutch are real into it, too. They've got sites, too. So there's a lot of different languages that you can stream it in. And it's just really exciting to watch, because it's the Giro. It's a big deal. It's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, you go to the site. Again, it is www.cyclingweekly.com, and you will see daily route maps put out, or daily hill profiles put out. Some of them are really flat. Some of them are ugly. Just I think that's probably the best way to put it. Things that would just, they're real like leg breakers. And anyway, there's a whole breakdown. It's just really fun. So if it, like stage 9, May 14th, oh my God, it ends with a top of the mountain climb on the finish line. Just some really cool stuff. So the Tour of Italy, Giro d'Italia, for those of us who are bicycle geeks and are into this sort of thing, it's definitely something to be watching right now. It's a big event in cycling if you're into cycle racing. And you can always catch daily clips also on YouTube, and they will be in various languages, but you can get, you know, usually highlights of that day's race on YouTube. So you get to at least get a piece of the action, which is really exciting because we never used to be able to get this kind of information. So that is the big deal. Now, there was a very interesting thing that the Giro had put a, and I don't know if I have this right in front of me. There was a piece that they had tried to increase the excitement of the race, and they were going to give prizes to the people who could ride the fastest down the hills in some of the stages in the Giro. And there were some financial prizing that was there. Fortunately, someone came to their senses. Maybe the UCI stepped in. I'm not sure exactly how this went. I remember reading a piece on Velo News about it, and they stopped it from happening because of the amount of risk involved and danger involved in encouraging riders to break speed limits going down hills on steep mountain stages. So they did back off on that. There's enough excitement in the Giro without having to do that. There's plenty of excitement out there. So anyway, that was a little wag of the finger to the tour organizer for coming up with a crazy idea like that. You know, it's bad enough that athletes in all sports, and I will say all sports, are exploited the way they are exploited for financial gain. But really, you know, don't take their lives in their hands. That's really a foolish thing to do. So anyway, it got stopped. That's a good thing. That's very, very good news. And so we'll move on and make sure you get to check it out because the Giro is cool. Definitely a cool thing. So there's a few other things out there that might not be that might be worth talking about. Five signs that you're not a beginner anymore on your bicycle.
Oh,
yeah. I thought that might pique your interest, Fran.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you realize that you weren't a beginner anymore?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, gee.
Because so, I know you began by hopping on your bike and doing the Five Borough Tour.
That was
kind of your beginning, right?
Right.
Which is, by the way, way over the limit of where most people begin with their bicycles.
Yeah.
But
I just looked at Susan O'Keefe and said, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then I did it.
Yeah.
And then
you did.
Then I started riding my bike and I just kept riding. And I had a sore tailbone for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then I bet you did.
And then it went away.
Yeah.
And I never got it back. The sore tailbone, I mean, because mm-hmm. I never stopped riding. So let's see. How did I know I wasn't a beginner anymore? Probably when, after I did the Five Borough bike ride, I started riding and the tailbone pain went away. And I said I was going to do whatever the next thing was. The Five Borough ride was in May. And trying to think what the next ride, because that year on my old clunky 40-pound Schwinn bike, I did the... I must have done a bunch of things before I did the steeplechase because I wound up doing that Five Borough bike ride. I did the Harlem Valley ride. I did the 50 of the Harlem Valley ride, which is a Bike New York event as well. And then I did the 50-mile steeplechase, and I did a 50-mile MS ride out of New York City. So I did four of those. So probably I was past beginner. when I made the decision.
You went from beginner to not there anymore, like in a matter of two rides.
Pretty much, because I made the decision. I made the decision to do Harlem Valley right away, and I completed the 50. I mean, I had to walk some of it, but I completed the 50, and I started riding everywhere. Once I did that five borough ride, I just started riding my bike as often as I could. I would stick in rides wherever I could get them in.
So the article that was written by Caitlin Giddings from Bicycling Magazine, she posed this question to the people in the Bicycling Magazine office, because there's obviously a lot of people who ride bikes and are very enthusiastic. Some people race, some people just ride, some people tour, some people do all different things. They mountain bike, they do whatever. And so she poses this question, and she thought that her inbox was just going to be filled with responses. And the most universal response that she got was, "Oh, I still feel like a beginner almost every day."
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, I can understand that, because you just, when you get on your bike, you just never know what's going to happen. You never know how much energy you're going to have, what kind of a ride you're going to have, unless you've made a clear decision to go very slow that day. Then you know that you're going to go very slow. But if you're going to go and do intervals, or you're going to go on a group ride, or you're going to go race, you really don't know what's going to happen, because your body is so dynamic. You don't know. You don't necessarily know what kind of a day you're going to have. You can do all the best laid plans of mice and friend. You just never know. So, I mean, in that sense, you always feel like a beginner. I always, and I get race jitters before I go do my intervals.
That's funny.
I do, but by myself. Really, I get race jitters. I get a little anxious and nervous because I don't know what's going to happen when I get on that bike.
You're just going to get on your bike and going to ride. That's all.
I know.
Just like you did the day before and the day before and the day before.
I mean, my race jitters aren't as bad if I'm going to do intervals by myself, but, as they are if I'm going to go ride with a group or ride on a race.
So you always feel like a beginner.
In
that sense. So the basics become second nature when you get to the point where you're not feeling like you're a beginner anymore.
Yeah.
And the list here goes, you feel truly comfortable riding in a group, and mm-hmm. instinctively start to know what to do when adapting to a new one. So, like, for instance, we did a ride in Glastonbury last weekend, and we were with different people and new people, but you weren't uncomfortable with that, were you?
No.
Not at all.
No, but we also decided to sweep. So
yeah,
we did something very specific. So we intentionally rode very, very slowly to support a gentleman who had very early season fitness, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. And what did we do? We swept. So it was good. It was a fun thing. Okay, here's another one. You can grab for a water bottle without consciously thinking about which hand to use.
Right.
So right or left, you can just reach down, pull your bottle out. I mm-hmm. always pull out with my right because I'm right-handed, so that's just kind of a common thing.
Yeah.
But
I'm not sure. I have to do it.
Yeah, try it. Try it and see.
That's probably my right hand.
Okay, how about you're able to ride at the front of a pack and to control the pace and shepherd other riders?
I can do that if it's a C or C plus ride.
Right, right. Well, you got to know your level. I always say that the person that can lead a ride and comfortably lead a ride is usually the one that can ride at the higher level, the level above that. So if you're riding at, there's different levels of rides, as far as people are concerned with clubs and all. They have A rides, B rides, C rides, D rides, and on and on. So if you're normally a B rider and you want to lead a C ride, that's a great place to start, because you'll be more than comfortable there. You'll certainly be able to control the pace, and you'll be able to keep everybody happy at the same time, and also teach them things too, which is always helpful. Okay, next, you become aware of the gearing you're in without even looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pretty much know where you are. You kind of got a good feel for it. I mean, I still look down, and I've been doing this forever.
Yeah.
And I still glance down sometimes. Sometimes I glance down and go, oh, gosh, I'm already there.
Right.
Meaning that I was hoping for an easier gear, and I wasn't there. So that can happen at any level of riding. And then here's another one. You notice yourself shifting into a tougher gear right before standing out of the saddle. Keep the same pace and avoid from slipping back, which is something that I coach people with all the time. If you're going to get out of the saddle, put it in a little bit bigger gear so that you can keep the same amount of wattage putting out that it's coming out, and then keep a nice steady pace. And I can go back to that. I'm going to make another side note on that one too. As far as the avoid slipping back piece, one thing to be very aware of if you're in a group ride is as you're running into a hill and the group is going into a hill, you'll often see someone get out of the saddle on their bicycle and that rear wheel will come back towards you very, very quickly. And that is a... something that can be mastered. That is actually a poor riding skill, and it can be cleaned up and mastered by simply, when you do get out of the saddle, if you have popped it up one extra gear, so a little bit harder pedaling gear, when you raise yourself out of the saddle, you raise yourself straight up out of the saddle, keeping the same pressure on the pedals as you go, and then you get into your position out of the saddle as you're climbing. And that will keep you from, the term we use is throwing the bike backwards. And it'll keep the bike from going into the rider who's behind you and keep the rider behind you safe. So it's a skill. You need to work on it. It's great to master. It makes everybody a lot safer on a group ride. So moving on from that one. You've gotten through, let's see, you've gotten enough bad mistakes out of the way that you're usually starting to learn from them. That could be true in life, couldn't it? So anyway, there you go. You're no longer a beginner when you get to the point where you've made enough of those bad mistakes that you've learned your lessons and you're starting to ride better. Like, for instance, the throwing the bike back when you get out of the saddle, as an example. Okay, when you're at a traffic light, clipping in and out no longer causes a panic attack. Yeah, and we all know that one. That's pretty common. If you're going to tip over going nowhere, it's usually at a traffic light or in an intersection when you're starting out.
Especially if it's a steep pitch downhill.
Yeah, I know. We've heard this one many times. Frog Bridge, Willimantic. No. So anyway, you get through that anxiety, and I always keep one foot clipped in, so I'm always right there with one foot. And last on the list, you no longer feel you have to hammer to prove yourself when it's your turn at the front of the pack. This is a pace line etiquette thing, and this is a very, very, very common mistake, and I see it on people that have been riding their bicycles for years and they still make the mistake. And they believe that if you are riding in a group ride and you're riding in a pace line, so one rider behind the other rider with each rider taking individual turns at the front, usually of the same interval, then when it's your turn to get to the front, you get this grandiose idea that now it's your turn to work hard. So you're going to work really hard and you leave everybody behind. And it's like, no, you want to keep the same pace. Listen carefully. It's called a pace line. Why is it called a pace line?
Because it's not a ride off the front line.
Right. It's to keep the same pace. The idea is to keep the same pace, not change the pace.
Yeah.
So it's a pace line. So anyway, that one right there, I think that because of that one right there, I think there's a lot of people that are still beginners, even though they've been riding thousands and thousands of miles, because they can't even relate to that particular issue. So anyway, moving on. And at last, mechanical independence. You can actually change your own flat.
Ugh.
That's when you know you're not a beginner anymore.
I'm
you
a
can
beginner.
Change your own flat. We need to, amongst the people that we ride with, it would be nice to see that everyone was able to change their own flat. I don't think I can say with confidence that everyone can.
I can't.
I also know that if I'm on the ride, I generally don't let them. But
right.
Because
so nobody can learn.
because, well, I get to a clinic every time I do it, though. I always have a verbal commitment to the flat tire change.
Yeah, verbal doesn't help.
I explain everything very carefully. But I just, you know.
Totally a thing you have to learn by doing.
I don't have a half an hour for a flat tire change.
Mm.
I have 2 minutes.
Right.
I want it done. And I've changed thousands of them. So if you have an experienced rider with you or an experienced bicycle mechanic with you and they offer to change your flat for you, let them teach you. Let them show you exactly what they're doing. Let them show you the skills they have. But let them do it because you want to get on with the ride. And chances are that when they fix your flat tire, it won't immediately go flat again. Whereas you can have that happen if you're not careful. I often recommend to people if they are, let's say you're getting ready to go out on your weekend ride. It's a Saturday morning and you're all excited and it pours. It just pours out.
You mean like what's probably going to happen on this Saturday?
Well, that's a possibility. We don't know until we see it. But let's say that does happen, and you are all excited to do this. Why don't you change your tire 3 or 4 times?
No.
Because repetition teaches you. If you do it over and over and over again, change your tire just like you got a flat. Do it 3 or 4 times. Make sure you don't just do the front tire. Make sure you do the rear tire too. Just deflate the tire. Take the wheel off. Take the tire off, peel out the tube, go through the whole process of putting it back in again and practicing. Do it a few times so you get a good feel for it. And then when you're out on the road, maybe even not with a group, but maybe by yourself, you'll be able to rescue yourself in the situation. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you've stopped being that person who always has to borrow a mini pump and a spare tube in the middle of the ride. Yeah, you're not a beginner anymore when you finally figure it out and you carry a set of tire levers and a tube and a spare and a pump with you. And quite honestly, a few tools too. Don't forget a few tools because you can, Allen wrenches are useful. There are things that can go wrong, you know, and so it's kind of nice to have a few tools. There's always going to be that one guy on the ride, that Dave Wahlberger, who's got the entire bike shop with him.
Yeah.
And he'll be able to take care of you. So there always is going to be that guy out there or someone like myself who just, you know, I can pretty much pull people out of a tough situation no matter what. Even if I have to improvise, I'll figure out a way to get them back on their bike and home. Okay, and then here's another one. You can go to a bike shop and you can explain what's wrong with your bike in real words, not just by making the noise it makes when you stand up. That's funny. That's like car talk. You know, the car talk guys, they have people make the noises and people make the funniest noises.
Yeah.
Very, very funny.
Like that Aiello commercial.
Yeah.
They do the same thing. My heat's going.
Right. So anyway, you started handling basic bike maintenance at home. Bring me back to changing your flat tire at home.
Yeah.
Practicing back and forth, doing that. And then you can also... If you utilize your local bicycle shops, which utilize, not abuse, got that? Utilize, not abuse. Little rant there. If you utilize your local bike shop and you ask questions and advice, they'll probably give it to you because that's what they're there for, because they're into the business. They love bikes. Remember always to support those folks too. Remember that is what they do for a job. And you know, you probably don't go to your physician and ask for doctor advice without expecting to have to pay for it. So, you know, just think about that. Don't abuse it, but always ask because they're as enthusiastic about your riding your bike as you are riding your bike. So anyway, and then your friends start asking you what bike to buy for themselves or for their kids. So now you've become the local genius on bikes because you're no longer an amateur. You're no longer a beginner, but people look at you as, oh, that bike person. So those are 5 signs that, well, actually there's more. I see more here. You're less worried about the rules. Oh, I'm interested in this one. You've gone from riding in shorts and not caring to obsessing on how you look in spandex and not caring what you wear for a ride. You still get Cat 5 tattoos from your chain, but you've stopped minding them because it probably just means that you have big, rad, muscular calves. So the rules, okay. The rules, you know, if you just want to go out and ride your bike, just go out and ride your bike. I was at a shop yesterday. We were chatting, and he talked about a particular riding group down in southwestern Connecticut that has particular bothersome ways of dealing with people that they don't feel are up to their grade. And I'm just going to leave it at that. And he showed up for a ride, and they were looking him over and looking at the old bike that he had. And he had, he had appropriate, you know, wear on. He had his bike shorts, and he had all this, you know, and he had a bike. He had clipless pedals on his bike. But they were giving him kind of the bike snob is what they were doing. They're giving us bike snob. So this is a shout out to Boris at Smart Cycles, by the way, and in Norwalk. And Boris said, you know, it just upset him so badly that they did that, that the following week he showed up in a pair of torn shorts. They were blue jean cutoff shorts and flat pedals on a mountain bike with road tires on it. And he proceeded to go out, and Boris is a big guy, and Boris could put out some serious wattage. He proceeded to go out and blow them away.
Whoa.
So he showed up all, you know, non-geeked out at all, and went there and just blew them all away.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, why'd you do that? He said, because I could. And he said they needed to be spanked.
Yeah.
So backing up to a previous episode of Bicycle Talk, don't be a bike snob. Stop that. That's not necessary. It's really not. We are here to be ambassadors.
Yeah.
We are here to encourage people to ride their bikes. We are not here to discourage them or scare them away. So, and if you have that attitude, then just go ride by yourself. Just stay away from people.
I think we did a lovely thing this weekend, if I do say so myself. I mean, but that fellow, Bill, who hadn't been riding a lot, and we wound up riding with him, we probably inspired him to ride more.
Right.
Yeah, because when you do that, when you drop back and you take care of that rider that's off the back, or you take care of somebody, you help somebody with a flat, or you're, you know, obviously a skilled rider, but you stay back and you chat up somebody who's, and you stay with them on a ride that's where they're in the back, you know, that person's not going to give up on cycling.
You develop a rider for life by doing that.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
Right.
The other thing, when we were coming back on that ride, we were going down through a neighborhood, and there was a woman out running on the sidewalk as we were coming through the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And there was a little girl on a bicycle following her. And
yeah.
She was, you know, just pedaling along. She had her helmet on. She's real cute. Mm-hmm. She's just pedaling away. And I just looked over and I went, wow, that is such a cool bike. Check it out.
Yeah.
You go, you know. And I just gave her a lot of encouragement. You know, this is not a difficult effort, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Do it. Make sure. Be that ambassador. Please be the ambassador. I beg you to be an ambassador to cycling.
Mm-hmm.
My business card says ambassador of cycling.
Yeah.
Yes. It's very important. So moving on, we have a few more items on this list. This is great. Okay. Now, other way that you know that you're no longer a beginner, you're doing the impossible. You finally got a handle on that mountain biking loop with all those logovers and rock gardens that used to terrify you. Okay, that's if you're a mountain biker. You find yourself riding smarter, not just stronger, in either races or rides, using strategy ahead of brute strength. Oh, my God. Give a big tip of the hat on that one. You mastered packing your jersey pockets for rides of any duration or difficulty. And yes, you can, and I know that, you know, you do need to stop occasionally to get refreshments, mainly liquid, because you can go through a lot of liquid while you're riding on your bicycle, especially on a very hot day. But believe it or not, in a 100-kilometer to a 100-mile ride, you can carry as much food as you need to get yourself through that ride if you pack smart and bring the right food. So that's what we're talking about if you've mastered packing your jersey pocket for ride duration or difficulty. Now, there are other reasons to have rest stops. Obviously, putting liquid back into your bottles if it's a super hot day, or getting liquid out of your body if you drank too much liquid. There are reasons to stop otherwise, but you can usually make yourself pretty efficient on your bike and with your food and your water. And layering for a ride in inclement weather becomes automatic at some point. Now, that's a bit of a tricky one, depending on where you live. But I know that this person lives in Pennsylvania because she writes for Bicycling Magazine. Or I'm assuming that she lives in Pennsylvania because she writes for Bicycling Magazine. Today, we can't really assume that any longer because we have this computer system and people can live anywhere and work anywhere. But anyway, I'm just assuming. But when you get into the cooler climates like where we live up here in the Northeast, sometimes you blow it. You try real hard to get it right and you try to master it. But I've been riding for years, and I still have been known to make mistakes on clothing. But I'm pretty close most of the time. If nothing else, I am almost always overdressed, not underdressed.
But it's easy to make a mistake on clothing around here because the weather changes every 15 minutes.
It does. As a matter of fact, you can go out for a ride and go into the headwind thinking you're going to get blown home with the tailwind, and by the time you turn around,
The wind's changed.
It switches completely on you, and then you got to deal with that. So you try to look at your forecast. You try to look at, you know, what they predicted, which, by the way, if you're a meteorologist, you're going to hate me for this statement. If you're a meteorologist and you're in California, you got the easiest job in the world. But if you're a meteorologist here, out here in the Northeast, you just really don't know. You really don't. Yes, you can look at all the information. You can look at all, you've got equipment, you've got computers, you've got computer models which generate ideas and all, but you know what, until you've lived in the Northeast in New England, there's nobody that can really predict the weather properly. It's always just a guessing game.
Yeah,
it just turns into that. They're better than they used to be, but they still guess a lot. And what do I tell you about the weather? What's the weather? You always say, well, the weather tomorrow is going to be. And I say, what do I tell you about the weather?
You have to wait till it comes.
That's right.
You have to wait till tomorrow.
The weather's going to be what it is.
Yeah.
That's it. So anyway, what else we have here? So here's another I'm no longer a beginner. This is the last on the list here of knowing that you're no longer a beginner. And this is... you manage to ride home safely from the store with a with a case of beer balanced on your handlebars. I don't know about that.
These are miscellaneous new talents.
These are miscellaneous new talents. Yeah, you've got the same page open. Your heart rate goes up when you see someone hating on cyclists on social media.
Yeah. Guess I'm not a beginner anymore.
No, I haven't been a beginner for a very long time on that one. I really have trouble with people hating on cyclists. It's a real problem.
Really?
Yeah, I do. This is terrible. I'm going to say it anyway. You blow your first snot rocket without hitting yourself or anyone else with friendly fire.
So you see, when you're riding a bicycle, when you're doing intense exercise, mm-hmm. you have something called...
Fran's gonna put the science into this for
us.
Yeah,
you have something called vasomotor rhinitis, and it's protective. When you get out in the wind or when you're breathing very hard, your nose runs, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's normal. If it happens, guess what you are? Normal.
Right.
You can't. That's why everybody has to blow their nose when they're doing hard efforts. So there are different methods of relieving yourself of the mucus that inevitably forms in your nose. One is to very delicately reach in your back pocket where you have stored your friendly handkerchief or bandana. And some people are bandana people, and they prefer to use a bandana to get rid of their nose stuff.
Mm.
I am of the camp of when you wear cycling gloves are generally equipped with a terry panel. That is, the terry panel is there for you to wipe your nose. And that's generally what I do.
Mm.
The really bad thing is that sometimes I forget that I'm not on my bicycle, that I'm at my office, and I wipe my nose that way too. And
oh, boy.
Oh, no. Well, this is the time to use a handkerchief or a tissue. And then there is the as we call it, the snot rocket method. And that is basically you block one nostril with your finger and you lean over the side of your bicycle and you blow hard. So you're basically blowing your nose into the air. And you the skill is to not get it on yourself or anyone else. And then you block the other side and you blow the other side.
So did you see the link below that on your page?
It instructs you how to do it.
There's a link of how to blow a snot rocket.
Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Good, very good.
Yeah.
Choose a side. Avoid spraying the pack. Well, I'm gonna tell you here's one that this is Ron's etiquette, bicycle etiquette 101. Okay. Ron's Bicycle Etiquette 101, if you need to do that, if you need to clear your nose or do something like that that might possibly land on someone else, go to the back.
Yeah.
Just go to the back. Don't be a fool. You know, it's really simple.
Yeah.
You just, you know, be considerate of others.
Right.
You know, that's the way to do it. Some people just won't do that. They won't do the whole, you know, the get rid of it the easy way method, and they'll have to take out a tissue or whatever. But
yeah, I'm
not that choosy. I've been on my bike for too long.
I'm just not skilled at it, so
right.
I'd rather wipe my nose. I don't want to take the time to reach for a hanky either, because that's just you know, I'll reach for food, but I don't want to reach for a hanky.
And this one is really good. The last one on the list here of considering alternatives to this in a big group or a fast pack. Sometimes it's just better to blow in your hand or wipe it on your shorts.
Yeah, you could do that too.
You know, shorts are black. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, if you have white shorts, then you have green shorts.
Ew.
Not necessarily. Not
necessarily. You're only going to have green shorts if something's wrong.
I knew this would go
there. I mean, if you're healthy, your mucus is going to be clear. If you have green mucus, you've got something wrong. You've got an infection.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. Well, anyway, so we've pretty much covered all we can cover today. Look at this. It's almost over. It's almost our time.
Yeah.
So big highlights, things to look out for. You wanna watch for area rides. You can check bikereg.org. Is it .org or .com? I can't even remember. But Bike Reg. Bike Reg will have regional rides, races, tours, etc. And you'll see a lot of things that are coming up in the near future. There are weekly rides that are found on sites like Meetup.
And it is bikereg.com.
It is .com.
Yes.
Okay, great. So you will find things on the Meetup pages, and you can get information there. I know that our local club posts there, so you can always look there. The Tour de Mansfield is coming up in June, and we will have a ride that will be leaving from, starting and finishing from the community center in Mansfield stores. And we also are dealing with Bike Month, and there is a annual Bike to Work Week, which is the third week in the month of May. And so there's a lot of events that are geared around that, and Bike to Work Day is the third Friday in May. So there's a lot of things going on. The birds are singing, the leaves are popping, the flowers are up. It's spring. It's great. It's wonderful. We love riding our bikes. We love the fascination of watching spring happen. So it's good. And then, of course, there is also the Giro d'Italia. So if you're interested in the watching the Giro d'Italia or learning more about it, you can get most of the information you need online, and you can check that out. It's very, very exciting. So anyway, keep an eye on your calendars and on the events that are happening here. And we will see you again next week here. So if you have been listening to the show, I really appreciate it. If you want to reach us, make sure you reach us through the email. My name is Pedlin Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can reach me by sending an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And remember, you can hear the podcast of this show and others on whus.org and also on iTunes. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember to keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.